Welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yordana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bav Metzia, daf Mem Aleph, page 41. However, we left that third Mishnah over from yesterday's daf, so I'm going to pick it up there and carry it through to Mem Aleph. Here we go. Mishnah. Manin. Hamafkid chavit etel chavero, velo yichadula ba'ali makom. The case is one who leaves a barrel with another party, right? And the owners did not have a special place for that barrel to be stored in the watcher's, in the protector guardian's house. And then, now the guardian, the shomer, the protector, moves it, carries it, and it breaks. So if it broke like literally in his hands as he's holding it, right? Then the question is, did he move it for his own purposes? If he moved it for his own purposes, then he's liable for the cost of the barrel and presumably, right, the insides, I mean the contents. He's liable for the damage. If he moved the barrel for the safeguarding of the barrel itself, like to prevent it from being damaged, for example, then he would be exempt from having to pay. But if it broke in his hands. From the time that he put it down, then it broke. Then he's exempt, patur. Whether he moved it for his own purposes or if he moved it for the safeguarding of the barrel itself, he's exempt. The question, of course, is going to be why is he exempt in that case and not in the previous case, not in the case of where it becomes, where it's for the protection of the barrel. Ichadula haba'alim makom. Now, in the event that the owners actually did have a special place for the barrel to be, betil talav nishbara, and the shomer, the guardian, moves it and it breaks, ben mitoch yado, ben mishin nechal letzarko, whether it's still in his hands or it's from the time he put it down, letzarko chayav letzarka patur. Then again, for his own, if he moved it for his own needs, it's he's liable to pay. If he moved it to protect it, meaning despite the fact that he's moving it out of the place that it had been designated to be in, that had been designated for it to be in, he would still be exempt. Meaning he's doing his best to protect it, and unfortunately it broke, but apparently there was a concern for it staying where it had been placed to begin with. Okay. Now, the opening of the Gemara, as is often the case, is trying to figure out whose opinion does the Mishnah align with, meaning this Mishnah doesn't have any names in it. So is it Rabbi Yishmael's view? Is it Rabbi Akiva's view? And we're going to leave that all. You can, you know, puzzle through it yourselves. It's worth talking about for sure. But what I want to do is get to the next bit where we're still talking about the Mishnah, but not just who said it and whose views does it align with, but exactly what's going on here with the moving of the barrel. Tirgamai Rabbi Natan Bar Abba Kameda Rav. So Rabbi Natan Bar Abba was interpreting this Mishnah in the presence of Rav, and he says, right, we're talking about the Mishnah, was talking about a case of, and he says, Shenatla al manat lishloch ba yad, where the shomer took that barrel with intent to somehow misappropriate it, as opposed to for its protection. But, you know, he's moving it for some, we don't know exactly what the shlichut yad is, this misappropriation, and their commentaries really, you know, delve into this, you know, is it the same or is it tantamount to robbery? Is it misuse? You know, it's not necessarily clear what this kind of misappropriation is, but shlichut yad is not an innocuous term. It means that there's some negative handling going on here. But my kamiflige, so the Gemara says, well, then what's Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Natan here, right? What are they disagreeing about? So specifically, b'shlichut yad shricha chisaron. So Gemara says, well, we're talking about misappropriation, which inherently requires loss, meaning that in itself is a whole discussion, and the Gemara discusses it, picks it up shortly. But the whole question of, you know, are you missing something? If somebody has misappropriated to fulfill the characterization as of misappropriation, it means that there has to be some kind of diminishment of value. So, you know, if we're talking about the other day. We're talking about, you know, when you pour from one container to the other and you lose some amount of the liquid, or it gets absorbed into the barrel itself or something like that. That's not, there is loss there, but it's not inherently misappropriation. It's just the natural, you know, what happens in the natural use of things. But in the event of misappropriation, it seems like obvious that there would be some loss, because that's what it means. Shlichut yad has this negative element. If you're saying that misappropriation is really some kind, that's really what's going on here is some kind of theft, that's exactly where you're going to see the diminishment of value. If you're going to say that it's just about misappropriation, not really going so far as theft, then you don't have to require loss for shlichut yad, for this category of misuse or misappropriation. Rav Sheshet doesn't like this. Matifla Rav Sheshet, he disagrees, he objects. Wait, does the Tana actually say that the Shomer took it? It says in the Mishnah, Tiltala Katani. It just says that he moved it. Moving it doesn't really have to imply misappropriation at all. It could just be, you know, like I keep thinking about you when you move something out of the sun because it's going to damage the heat, or the sunlight could damage what's there. I've made up that case, right? But like, but we're going to see the examples here where it's not necessarily theft, right? It's not necessarily wrong. Ella Amar Rav Sheshet Hacha B'Maya Skina, what's the case talking about? Kigon Ketiltala Lehavi Alei Gozalot. If you're talking about a case where you move that barrel so that you can put gozalot, baby birds, right? Fledglings from a, you're going to bring in the nest from the tree and put it on top of the barrel, right? Well, maybe that's not, maybe that is misappropriation, but it really isn't about theft. B'Kasavar Sho'el Sholomi Da'at Gazlan Have. So the Gemara goes on to note, right, that this Mishnah, the Tana of the Mishnah, can hold that somebody who borrows without the knowledge of the owners, which is what some, which is what is happening when you're using that barrel to be the perch for the fledgling birds, well, then isn't that, it's without the original, without the knowledge of the owners, that's tantamount to theft. And it goes back, it brings it back to this discussion over whose opinion was the Mishnah like, and it lines it up here with Rabbi Yishmael for the sake of, you know, well, again, I don't want to delve into it, but, and then that last point there is to say that the Shomer is responsible because he put the barrel in a place that's not the designated place, so that any of this ends up saying it is, it smacks of the theft in a way that, you know, I'm not sure that Rabbi Natan, that that's necessarily the view, but Rav Sheshet is still acknowledging, he's still presenting it in the context of something that's not right from what the handling of it by the Shomer. The Gemara goes on to say, what about Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan, right? Hemicha b'makom mashma. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who said to begin with that you can't, we didn't really talk about this, but that you can't hold, you can't stand, address both parts of the Mishnah to be the same Tana, right? That whole big chunk that I skipped over, you know, who is the Mishnah like? Whose opinion is represented? Rabbi Yochanan says part of the Mishnah is like one and part of the Mishnah is like the other. Why? Because specifically when it says hinicha, that he placed it or he put it down, that suggests that he put it in its designated place, b'makoma mashma, in its real place. So if you're putting the barrel in its real place, then that's really very different than to say he moved it out of its real place for the sake of whatever whatever he's doing with it, whether for its own protection or to use for the perch of birds or any which thing. Okay. There's a mission and a little bit of it, of a little bit of commentary on it. Yerdina, you. It's yeah. Over to you.
Yeah, all right. I'm really just going to sort of pick up where you ended here. But it is interesting to see how, you know, the Gemara thinks that there is a little bit of like an internal contradiction and has to present different ways of how to resolve it. So the Gemara now is going to get to back to the question of if a Shomer takes a deposit and there's intention to sort of deplete some of it, right? Does he take responsibility immediately or not until he actually, you know, depletes the produce? So Itmar, it was said, Rav Levi had a machloket about this. Chad Amar once said, Shlichut yad tzricha chisaron, misappropriation is dependent upon a loss. V'chad Amar, Shlichut yad enat tzricha chisaron. right? Misappropriation is not dependent upon a loss. So now they're going to explain this a little more. Tistayim de Rav Hu de Amar. It can be determined that Rav is the one who said Shlichut Yad Einat Tzricha Chiseron, that misappropriation is not dependent on a loss. Detanya, because it was taught in a Braisa, Ro'esh Haya Ro'eh Edro. So if a shepherd is tending his flock, V'yaniach Edro V'al'ir, and then he left his flock and he went to the town. Uvaze'e V'taraf, and then a wolf came and tore through a sheep. Uva'ari V'daras, or a lion came and clawed at one of the sheep. Pator. He is pator. He's not liable because that's considered to be like a normal thing that happens, right? That the sheep might get attacked. Hinicha maklo v'tarmilo aleha. But if right before the attack, he put his staff or his pouch on the sheep, right? Chayav. Then he actually would be chayav to pay. And this will be explained a little bit, this will be explained later on. But the idea essentially is, it'll explain it later on. Okay. So this is, now how do they know that this is Rav? Okay. So it says, V'havinan ba, right? When we raise this following question about this ruling, Mishum dehiniach maklo v'tarmilo ala ha-chayav, right? The shepherd is chayav to pay damages just because he put his staff or his pouch on the sheep. Hashakli nuhu, right? But he removed them before the attack occurred. So if the placement of the articles in the sheep is sort of an act of misappropriation, in other words, he put something on the sheep that shouldn't have been there, and that's how he sort of like misused the sheep, right? So when he removes them, right, isn't that like returning the sheep? So then why would he be chayav? So the answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bar Avuah, Amar Rav. So Rav Nachman says the name of Rav Bar Avuah, who said in the name of Rav, but Odan Aleha. The Bryce is talking about a case where the shepherd's articles were still on the sheep at the time of the attack. So since the sheep were not returned, the shepherd is chayav because he basically was not using the sheep correctly by leaving his stick and his pouch on the sheep. V'chi Odan Aleha Mai Habe, right? And what does it mean, right? That the articles were still on the sheep. Halo mishacha, right? But the shepherd didn't do any type of act of like actually making a kinyan. He didn't draw the animal in. So it's not like he really misappropriated the sheep. It never ended his possession as a stolen object. He didn't actually steal the sheep. So the answer here, V'amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Amar Rav. So Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak says the name of Rav. Shehik Shah B'makal. Right? The Bryce refers to a case where the shepherd hit the sheep with his staff when he put it on the staff, and it ran before him because of the blow. And then this way he sort of like drew the sheep into his domain because the sheep came running towards him. So based on this, that it was Rav who gives this answer, then they basically say that what do we know about Rav's opinion about misappropriation? But according to Rav, the shepherd didn't cause a loss to the sheep, right? Because Rav said that the shepherd just hit the sheep. El alav shma minash. Surely then, right? We learn from this because savar shlichut yad einat tzrichin chisaron. That Rav holds that misappropriation is not dependent on a loss, right? So in other words, the idea here is that maybe the reason why the shepherd is chayav to pay is not because of misappropriation to the sheep, but he borrowed it without the owner's permission. Okay. And therefore, you know, that's why he would be chayav. So what we're saying actually is that the shomer is chayav for barring the deposit without permission, only if the deposit is an item that doesn't deteriorate with use. If the shomer like sort of uses the item in a way that he shouldn't have used it, like an animal, right? That does make it deteriorate with use. And then he's liable for shlichus yad and not borrowing, okay? So that's kind of the difference. Like shlichus yad is misappropriation as opposed to just borrowing something. So there's something specific about the case of an animal, right? When you misuse an animal, so, you know, there's wear and tear on the animal or something. It's different than sort of like just borrowing an object and nothing happening to it. Now, this is how Rashi sort of explains what's going on here. Some of the Mefarshim have a different interpretation, but that's what's happening. Okay. Okay, now the Gemara is actually going to reject all of this and say, no, Rav actually holds the opposite view. Ema shehichshah b'makel, right? Maybe the shepherd weakened the sheep when he hit it with his staff, and that's actually considered a loss. Deka nami diktani, and indeed, right, this interpretation is actually from a precise reading of what Rav said, because Rav said, shehiksha b'makel, right, that the Braisa talks about a case where the shepherd hit the sheep with the staff. He specifically mentioned the staff, which can hit an animal very strongly, shmamina. So actually, according to Rav, it's the opposite of what we just said, that shlichut yad is dependent actually on an actual loss. So now that we know that that's Rav's opinion, then Levi has to be the one who holds the other way, right? The Rav suffered shlichut yad sricha chisaron. Misappropriation has to have a loss. Levi savar shlichut yad einat sricha chisaron. So Levi holds that misappropriation is not dependent on a loss. And now they want to understand Levi's opinion, right? My time at the Levi, what's Levi's reasoning? I'm a Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Nehurai. So Rabbi Yochanan sent in Rabbi Yossi ben Nehurai. Mishunesh lichut yad ha'amura b'shomer schar. Right? This is talking about the law of misappropriation mentioned in connection with a paid custodian, a shomer schar, is different from mishlichut yad ha'amura b'shomer chinat, than misappropriation with an unpaid custodian, right? That there is a difference between a shomer schar and a shomer shchina, when we talk about this. And then Rabbi Yochanan's going to come and he says, Va'ani omer, right, eina mishuna. And I say that it isn't actually different. So from here, the Gemara is going to explain Rabbi Yossi ben Nehurai's opinion, and then they're going to try to explain Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Okay, so first it says, Umay Mishuna. This is Rabbi Yossi ben Nehurai's opinion. Okay, what does he mean that when we talk about the law of misappropriation with a paid custodian, it's different than with a unpaid custodian? Lote mar shichu yad b'shomer schar, right? The laws of misappropriation are not there when we talk about a shomer schar, a paid custodian. V'tete mishomer chinam. And you could have logically derived it from an unpaid custodian. Uma shomer chinam shepator b'gneva v'eda. An unpaid custodian who's not obligated to compensate the owner for theft or for loss, shlach ba yad chayav, but he is obligated to pay if there's a misappropriation of the object he's watching. Shomer schar shachayav b'gneva v'aveda, but a paid custodian who's obligated to pay for theft or loss, lo kol shekein, shouldn't they also have to pay then for misappropriation the same way that a shomer chinam has to? L'may hilchata katvin hu rachman. So for what teaching, right, for which law did the Torah want both references in the Torah, right? When you could have just made the connection between a shomer chinam to a shomer schar. Why would you need to teach this? L'mar lach, right? Why did they need to teach this? Shlichut yad einat tzricha chisaron. Right, the real chiddush of the shomer schar is that you can have misappropriation that's not dependent on a loss. Now the Gemara is going to look at Rabbi Yochanan's view. V'ani omer, but I, Rabbi Yochanan, say eina mishuna. It doesn't make a difference between a shomer chinam and a shomer schar. Ki Rabbi Elazar, right, and this is like the opinion of Rabbi Elazar to Amar Davida Achaki, who says they're both the same. Both of them have laws of misappropriation, and they, you know, they can be held liable for misappropriating. Ma davida achat. So then the Gemara wants to say, okay, what does Rabbi Elazar mean when he says one is the same as the other? Okay, because we're talking about a law of misappropriation, right? With a shomer schar, and that, you know, and we said that there's like basically a kal v'chomer here. So how can you with a shomer chinam? So how can you say that they're the same? What is he talking about? So he's saying that Rabbi Eliezer actually doesn't like this kal v'chomer, right? Mishum de'eka l'mafrach, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the kal v'chomer is flawed, and you can refute it. Why? Ma l'shomer chinam, because what can you prove from a shomer chinam? Shekein mishalim tashlimei kefel, who pays double the to'ein ta'anat ganav, right? When he claims that the deposit was stolen, and witnesses testified that he himself has stolen it, right? As opposed to a shomer schar, a paid custodian never makes a double payment. So we already see that there's a difference between a shomer chinam and a shomer schar with the payment if something gets stolen and then they're later found to lie. And according to Rabbi Elazar, you can't actually do this kal v'chomer. They're not anything that's comparable. So So then the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Yossi ben Nehorai and says why he doesn't consider this a point of, you know, why he doesn't consider this a refutation of the Kal v'chomer. Uman delo parich sabar, and the one, right, Rabbi Yossi ben Nehorai, who doesn't refute the Kal v'chomer holds, karna below shvua, right? The paid custodian's obligation to pay the principal if the deposit is lost or stolen takes place even without taking a false oath. Adifa mikefla b'shvua. So that's greater that you have to take a shvua than paying the double payment. So again, a paid custodian is always treated more stringently than an unpaid custodian. So therefore, you can infer this law of misappropriation from the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Schar. So there's a little bit of a head-spinning piece of Gemara here, I will admit that. I think it's interesting to get into this. We've sort of shifted gears a little bit. Before, we had been giving cases where sort of like there's a known loss that's going to happen while you're watching something of somebody else. And now we get into a totally different category, which is somebody is watching something and almost purposefully lets something happen to its value. And what are the implications of that? And could there actually also be a difference depending on whether it's a Shomer Schar or a Shomer Chinam?
I think it kind of brings it into sharp relief, the distinction between the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Schar, because of course, if you're paying someone, they're going to be more responsible. They better be. Like, what are you paying them for otherwise?
Right. So, of course, they're going to be treated more stringently. So I see both sides to it. On the one hand, if something is true of a Shomer Chinam, then okay, Kal v'chomer, it should be with the Shomer Schar. On the other hand, the other way of looking at it is they're so different from each other, you just can't make a Kal v'chomer from one to the other.
All right. I'm going to work to wrap my mind around that side of it.
Yeah, it's a confusing piece of Gemara. Like, I feel like I have to go back to it.
That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcasts. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think of this stuff. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hanun website. And until tomorrow, go and learn.